Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves. And we are back with Dr. Marty Greer for the Pure Dog Talk Veterinary Voice. And today we are talking about sort of a sensitive subject, prostate in boy dogs and the types and treatments and solutions and symptoms and all of that for prostatic disease in our males.
Yeah, and this is one of my favorite things to talk about, mostly because it's so misunderstood by the general practitioner veterinarian. I feel really bad for a lot of clients that end up in the middle of this confusion and really wish that more veterinarians would reach out to someone that's experienced in managing prostate disease before they make their treatment and surgical recommendations.
Right. So take us through this. What are some of the things that we're going to see if we're having a dog that's starting to have a problem with their prostate?
Well, we'll start with reasons that dogs can have blood in the urine, in the ejaculate, or just dripping from the penis independent of urination. One of the most perplexing is when it's a really young dog, under age 5, we can see a disorder that's called urethral prolapse, and it can be pretty profound, the amount of blood that comes from the penis. These are really young dogs, usually under a year of age, frequently bulldogs, but not always. We had another breed type here the other day, just a little terrier type dog. So what happens is that the lining of the urethra in the penis gets exteriorized and it becomes traumatized really easily, and then these guys will have some blood dripping from the penis. And it's perplexing because it's not an old enough dog to have prostate disease, and it can kind of come and go, so it can be a little bit tricky to catch it when you can actually see that tissue protruding. So that's one of the things that needs to be checked out. And, you know, they certainly can benefit from being neutered, but neutering is not absolutely necessary for these guys. There is a surgical procedure that can be done to manage that. So that's
okay.
Number one.
Okay.
Don't confuse it with something else. If they do have prostate disease, that's typically one of three different disorders, and it's mostly in dogs over the age of 5. There's prostate cancer, there's benign prostatic hypertrophy, there's prostatitis, and really rarely there's a disorder called a paraprostatic cyst. So those are the four, three of which are fairly common and one of which is pretty rare, causes of prostate problems in the male dog.
Okay.
Most commonly, symptoms, regardless of which of those you see, will be straining to pass a stool, blood dripping from the penis, frequently independent of urination. So you'll get up one morning and walk into your kitchen and there's blood dripped all over the floor. You look at all your females, no one's in heat, you can't quite figure it out. You look at your male dog that just won the national and you go, oh no, it can't.
Let's not have this.
Exactly. So at that point, you can start to narrow down who it is and the age of the dog and what their condition is. Now, dogs with prostate cancer almost always are neutered dogs. They're rarely dogs that are intact, and that's confusing to a lot of people. It's counterintuitive.
Yeah.
So the first conclusion is not, oh, my God, my dog has prostate cancer. It's most commonly, oh, my goodness, my dog has benign prostatic hypertrophy. So first you want to make sure that you get an accurate diagnosis. Dogs with prostate infections are usually sick. They can get as sick as females with pyometra because it is a pretty significant infection. So we can see, you know, a variety of different symptoms, but frequently the prostate is pretty evidently involved. So the diagnosis that's best for any of these conditions is going to be to go to a veterinarian that has experience in reproduction and an ultrasound machine and some skill in using it so that you can start to narrow down what the causes are. There are two kinds of prostate cancer, so let's start with that because that's the most scary and the most serious. So there's adenocarcinoma of the prostate, and then there's transitional cell carcinoma, which usually starts in the bladder, and then because the bladder and the prostate are so close to one another anatomically, it can kind of scoot its way down and end up involving the prostate as well.
Okay.
So the only way to absolutely positively confirm prostate cancer is going to be a biopsy of the prostate, and that can be done ultrasound-guided. It's usually not done surgically. And unfortunately, if you do end up with either of those conditions, it's quite serious. Transitional cell carcinoma is a little bit more treatable than adenocarcinoma, but both are serious. And like I said, it's almost always a neutered dog that has those conditions. So if your dog's intact, that's farther down the list of things that it could be.
Okay.
The second thing is going to be prostatitis or a prostate infection. And a lot of veterinarians confuse benign prostatic hypertrophy with prostate infections. So if they have a prostate infection, they usually have a fever, they're sick, they don't feel well. They can be difficult to make them ejaculate to try to evaluate the semen because they really feel pretty crummy. And they'll have a high white blood cell count. They may have some high liver enzymes because it's going to influence the alkaline phosphatase level as well. So there's a lot of different things going on. If you ejaculate the dog, you can see that there's clearly pus and bacteria in the ejaculate. So those dogs do definitely benefit from an antibiotic, but they also need to be on medication to shrink the prostate because the infection by itself is not going to go away with antibiotics. It's going to need a hormonal treatment as well. When they end up with benign prostatic hypertrophy, which is the most common thing, that's a hormonal disease, not a bacterial disease. Almost all men over 50 have some degree of it. Almost all dogs over age 5 have some degree of it. But your 5-year-old or older dog may not show any symptoms of it until you have a female in the environment in heat. So it may be at your house. It may be your neighbor. It may be at a dog show. It may be the roommate you shared the room with or the person you crated your dog next to at the dog show. And those are the dogs that feel great. They're bouncing around. Everything is wonderful. But you see these drips of blood coming from the penis. And those dogs benefit from hormonal treatment only. They don't need an antibiotic. And certainly castration, neutering the dog, is curative, but that significantly shortens your ability to keep those dogs available for breeding. I have not been successful in breeding dogs that are neutered.
Nobody has, no. No.
Unless you have semen frozen on them. So if you think your dog has benign prostatic hypertrophy, find a veterinarian that's comfortable in managing it, that neutering is not going to be the only tool in their toolbox, and that antibiotics are not the thing that they're reaching for first, that they're first reaching for hormonal medication. Now, the one that we've used most commonly and most frequently is finasteride, also known as Proscar or Propecia. Okay. On the human side. It used to be expensive when it was only available as a brand name product. It's recently become generic, and then it's also becoming increasingly difficult to get because it's no longer a big money drug for some of the pharmaceutical companies. We're starting to see some of our sources dry up, so we're hopeful that another pharmaceutical company will pick it up as a generic and continue to keep it available to us. It runs about $20 to $25 a month to keep the dogs on, so it's not very expensive to do, and it does a great job of managing dogs with benign prostatic hypertrophy.
And is that a thing that they're on for life?
Or until they're neutered. It's not something that you can just take them off of because it's going to be continuous. And, you know, I'm going to suggest to you that most husbands that are diagnosed with benign prostatic hypertrophy, their doctor does not recommend neutering. So I'm not sure why veterinarians are quite so hasty to make that as their only recommendation. But they certainly respond really quite well to finasteride as a treatment. So it's a daily medication. You give it once a day. It is something that you want to be careful handling the tablets. This is what they say on the commercial, that women who could potentially be pregnant should not handle the tablets because of a specific kind of birth defect. And it is pretty serious if it happens. It does influence the development of the genitals of a male fetus if a pregnant woman handles the broken tablets. So be aware of that. And even if you laugh and say, oh, I'm not, you know, I'm way past the age that I'm still going to have children, don't forget you have daughters, granddaughters, kennel help, other people in your life that might come in and help you with the dogs. And you want to be really cautious that none of them could be pregnant. And, of course, I look at these mothers and grandmothers and say, now, don't forget, you've got a young female in your house. They go, she's 14. She could. I say, oh, no, no, no. Be very careful.
Let's just not go there.
We cannot make that assumption. And you don't want your grandson to be born with a genital defect. So be very careful with the use of the drugs. That's the lawyer side of me that just popped out. Sorry.
No, that's awesome, actually. And so then how does that particular drug impact sperm production?
They still produce sperm effectively. It does reduce the amount of prostatic fluid when they ejaculate. So if you have a dog that's actively being used for breeding and you're planning to do some collections, you may want to take him off of it for a couple of days prior to the collection, but it improves semen quality. It does not deteriorate it. So if they don't have inflammation of the prostate, they actually do much better with their semen quality. It'll do quite well. And we have a lot of intact dogs in our practice that are actively taking it. So it works really well, and we like it a lot. The drug that we've used, if we couldn't get finasteride, is megestrol acetate, which is a female hormone. It still keeps the males fertile. They are still fertile on the drug, but we try not to use that if we're going to be able to use finasteride. That we give daily for the first 3 weeks, and then we go back to once a week on those products. The favorite drug, my very, very favorite drug, is unfortunately only available in Europe, It's called Epazin, and it's made by Virbac, the same people that bring us Iverheart Max and the CET Chews and all the great shampoos. But because we have so many neutered dogs in the United States, and because the recommendation for treating benign prostatic hypertrophy in most veterinary clinics is neutering, they have not spent the money on having this drug approved by the FDA for us to use in the United States. But it is a terrific drug. So if you know anybody that can influence anyone at the Virbac company, put the squeeze on them, because it is really quite a valuable drug for use in the dog. And it is given for 7 days and then only every 6 months.
Oh, wow.
Days. So it's a really handy drug for people to use. It's very convenient and does a really great job.
And the name of that one again?
Epazin. It's spelled Y-P-O-Z-A-N-E, Epazin. Huh. It was developed in France, and it's a great drug.
Nice.
But unfortunately unavailable at this time in the United States.
Right. Okay.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute.
How much is that doggy in the window?
Okay, crew. I hear it pretty much every day now. I love Pure Dog Talk. And that makes my heart happy, because I love doing it. I started hosting Pure Dog Talk as a way to reach out to members of our community with education and resources to enable you to succeed and move forward in your goals and ambitions. And your response has been literally overwhelming. The podcast has been downloaded well over 250,000 times to date. That's incredible. All of this information is free to exhibitors around the world at the touch of a button. But here's the reality check. Money really does make the world go round, guys. So I created a special patrons group. This funding source helps cover the expenses of audio editing and website hosting and technology and like that. Patrons keep Pure Dog Talk's fountain of knowledge flowing freely. And like the NPR of dogdom, our patrons support Pure Dog Talk with monthly gifts. We even offer advertising and sponsorship opportunities that you guys may not have known about. So drop me a note, laura@puredogtalk.com, and I'll let you know how you can help share the love.
So we've diagnosed that our dog has a problem. Maybe we've done a collection and seen brown ejaculate or something, you know, terribly horrifying like that, raising my hand.
Yes.
So we're then going to ultrasound, we're going to do a CBC, we're going to do all that kind of stuff to try to narrow down specifically what we're dealing with, correct?
Right, correct. Okay. So if you ultrasound the dog and the dog's prostate is moderately enlarged and there are cystic structures that look like Swiss cheese inside the prostate and the dog is not sick, typically you're going to use finasteride. If the dog is ill, you're going to use finasteride and an antibiotic. And if on ultrasound, instead of seeing a Swiss cheese-looking prostate, you see this giant cystic structure that looks like the dog has two bladders, that indeed is probably a paraprostatic cyst. So that is not very common. We see one of those every couple of years in our practice. And that is a surgical disease that generally requires neutering and then some extensive surgery on the cyst that I typically will refer to a surgeon to do, because it's a rather complicated surgery. Fortunately, those are rare, but if your veterinarian is scratching their head looking at the ultrasound going, look at that, two bladders, then that's when you want to start to talk about seeing a surgeon, seeing a radiologist, seeing someone that can do some advanced diagnostics and treatment for the dog, because it is a manageable disorder.
Huh. Okay.
So that's basically it, is we have prostate cancer, benign prostatic hypertrophy, paraprostatic cysts, and prostatitis.
And the most common is the either prostate infection or the benign prostatic
hypertrophy.
Hypertrophy.
Right. Right. Or
hyperplasia.
Hyperplasia.
That was the one I had heard. So I'm like, which one is
it? Yeah, those terms are kind of interchangeable.
Okay.
There are a couple reasons you want to treat benign prostatic hypertrophy. And certainly if you're not going to use the dog for breeding anymore, you don't mind if he's neutered, it's appropriate to neuter the dog. But if he's still an actively being campaign dog, or dog that's still being actively used for breeding, or you have other reasons that you want to keep him intact, in other words, you like his muscle tone, you like his coat, you like the other things about him when he's intact, then you do want to treat it, even if you don't have a female in the house, because if the dog ends up with benign prostatic hypertrophy or hyperplasia leading to a prostate infection, because those little cystic structures in the prostate are a fabulous place for bacteria to set up housekeeping and end up with a prostatitis and infected prostate, those dogs do get really sick. So you don't want to wait until you have a dog that's really ill from this. You want to be proactive about it. If your veterinarian diagnoses BPH, then put the dog on the appropriate medication and keep them on it. I have a lot of clients who kind of forget about it, or they don't get a refill, or, you know, a variety of different things happen. But do keep the dog managed either with castration or with medication long term so that you can keep him happy and healthy and fertile if that's your goal.
Right. Fertile being important for a lot of us. And then I think that is a really important conversation when we're talking about stud dog management. You've got your older dog and maybe you have frozen on him, maybe you don't, but maybe you really would like to have, you know, just that one more breeding and this sort of thing. So management that allows you to retain viability, I think, is an important conversation.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a reason you left him intact.
Right.
And it's typically because there's some value to him still being available as a stud. So if you don't have semen frozen on him, get his semen quality as good as you can. Trot into your veterinary clinic that does the semen freezing and get that semen evaluated. And if it's good, freeze it. If it's not good, then get him at the best possible semen quality that you can. And then you can manage him with neutering if that's an option for you. Because, you know, not everybody feels the need to use their dog for breeding, but a lot of people who have kept him intact for a long period of time have done so because this dog is valuable to their breeding program or to someone else's.
Okay, so here's another. This is going to throw you off the wall. I'm not trying to, like, play trick you, but
okay.
But these sort of things just randomly pop into my mind, and I just... So I have heard of and had, you know, sort of sideways discussions of the concept of neutering the dog and then using the semen that is in the testes to be frozen rather than pushing it through ejaculate when you have a problem like this. Thoughts?
Yeah, that's not the ideal way to do a semen collection. We do those
right.
only in moments of desperation.
Right.
You're always going to get a better semen quality if it's ejaculated and if it's managed with a normal semen collection and then freezing. The only time we recommend that is the way that you go is if the dog has met with an untimely and unfortunate short-term illness or acute death. In those cases, we can sometimes get enough semen for one or two breedings, but frequently it's not a good outcome as far as the semen quality goes, and sometimes we don't get any at all. So I would not recommend that as my first choice. I would always prefer having the semen ejaculated and then put in extender. And if you work with a veterinarian that is near to you and they can freeze the semen, that's great. If not, there is something called a cryo kit. So the dog can be ejaculated at your local clinic. The semen can be put into a special extender and in a box for overnight shipment, and it can be shipped to a freezing center that can then go ahead and freeze the semen. But that is absolutely my last choice. However,
right.
that being said, we have done it.
Right.
We have successfully done it. Many freezing clinics have, but it is not the ideal way to go. If the dog falls in the swimming pool,
mm-hmm.
if the dog, you know, has something tragic happen, it's better than nothing, but it is not ideal.
Right. Okay, so here's another one for Stump the veterinarian. Male dogs that, when collected, do not respond well to extender for whatever reason. You put the sperm in extender and it gives up a ghost and falls over dead.
Yeah, and frequently those are dogs that are older that may not have great semen quality to begin with or have prostate disease. So improving the quality of the ejaculate with nutritional supplements, and we can talk about that, and treating for benign prostatic hypertrophy can be helpful. There's a multitude of extenders out there as well. There are many extenders, and frequently, if you try different extenders with that stud dog, you will find that there is one that agrees with his semen better than others. And so, you know, you're maybe working with a veterinarian that can have access to multiple extenders. I tend to prefer using the canine extenders. I know there's a few people that use the horse product, but I always feel that the reason we have dog extenders is because that's been developed to give us the best results. So I tend to really fall back on the canine extenders. But we have lots of companies. We have ICSB, we have Symbiotics, we have MOFA and Minitube, we have Camelot Farms, we have Clone. So you have to have certain qualifications to get some of those extenders. They're not always available universally. But with some work, you can do that. There's one called Uppsala that can be manufactured or compounded for a veterinary clinic. So we've got a lot of choices. And if you just have a dog that's kind of fussy with his semen, many times just changing extender will make a difference in how the quality of the semen looks post-thaw. Now, sometimes these are just older guys that you've waited a little too long. There's nothing you can do. And those I really feel bad about. So this is why we tell clients freeze early and freeze often.
Yes.
So the ideal time is to start freezing when the dog is about 2 years old. By then you know that it's a good quality dog. You know what he's going to turn out to be like. You'll have his health clearances done at that point. So don't wait until the dog is 12 and then you say, oh, you know what? I should have. And I hear this every day in my practice.
I know.
Day. Doggone it, I should have been here.
Guilty. I've been guilty.
So don't wait too long. Get him frozen when he's young. You know, if something comes along and you decide that you don't want to keep his semen frozen, you can always discard it.
Right.
But there's a lot of tests that are going to be coming available to us down the road that we don't currently have for dogs. A lot of DNA tests will become available over the next few years. And with semen frozen, and then if you save a blood sample on the dog, you know, if he's getting older, then have a blood sample stored. We keep a blood sample on all the dogs that come to our practice on an FTA card so that if additional tests become available, you may be able to use some of these guys that are carriers of disease for breeding so you don't have to throw dogs out of the gene pool that may carry a disorder. And, you know, down the road, we're going to know what causes seizures. There's going to be blood tests for seizures and hip dysplasia and all kinds of serious diseases that we currently don't have a way to test for. But if this is a quality dog in every other way, and you think he's going to be valuable to your breeding program or someone else's, get some semen frozen. Don't wait. Get it frozen while he's still got good semen, and you get 4, 6, 8 collections at a time. Or a breeding unit set of collections instead of, you know, getting 0.2 breeding units.
Right.
Which totally make the client frustrated and make the veterinarian and their veterinary staff frustrated, because we want you to have a great outcome. We don't want to have to struggle to get 4 sperm and 3 swim backwards.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
It's just not good.
No.
So don't wait.
I speak from personal experience. Here's my testimonial. Do it. Because I had one of my oldest heart dogs. You know, you're young, you're poor, you're like, I can't invest that much money. Dumb person that I was, I didn't. And then it was too late. And so now I have a very exciting young prospect. And I was sending him off to field school, right? Like where anything can happen. And I'm like, all right, I don't care. You're a year and a half old. Get in here. We're collecting semen.
Exactly.
I mean, I'll be able to breed 10 bitches. I'm like, good, done.
Right. And I don't ever want to suggest that frozen semen is an investment strategy. So don't get me wrong. But it may cost you $1,000 to get 6 or 8 breeding units. Well, that's not a very expensive stud fee if you're using that on one of your own dogs compared to what it usually costs to use a stud service on someone else's dog.
Exactly.
So don't wait. Don't hesitate. Go ahead. Get it frozen. And you're going to have that available for $60 or $80 a stud service instead of $1,000 or $2,000 or whatever your breed commands or whatever stud dog commands.
The having it and not regretting it to me is worth, I don't even know how much money I'm paying, and I don't even care because it's just, oh my gosh. Okay, well, thank you so much. Once again, male reproductive health, there we are.
Yeah, we get to say words no one else gets
to say. Isn't that the coolest? Oh, man. All right. Well, thank you so much, Marty. I really appreciate your time. You have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our Dog Show Superintendents are the hardworking people who make the Dog Show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the Supers desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.